Byrne and his squad sprinted to the Jim Dandy's entrance and burst through its double doors. The diners twisted in their seats and gawked as the armored Marines emerged from the vending machine-packed foyer. One of the waitresses held out a menu, an involuntary gesture that earned a rough shove from Byrne as he muscled past. The staff sergeant's Argus clattered like an enraged insect as he pulled something from under the food counter. A purse, burgundy mesh, with a golden chain. At that moment, the door to the restaurant's bathrooms at the far end of the counter swung open. A middle-aged woman in black pants and a cropped corduroy coat stepped through, casually flicking water from her freshly washed hands. When she saw the armored hulks of Bravo Squad, she stopped mid-stride. Her heavily mascaraed eyes darted toward the purse. Her purse.
"On your knees," Byrne bellowed. "Hands on your head."
But as the staff sergeant lowered the purse to the counter and brought his M7 to bear, the woman leapt toward a table where the family of four had just gotten settled. She hooked an arm around the neck of the youngest boy and wrenched him out of his chair. He couldn't have been any more than 4 years old. His little feet kicked as he began to choke. Byrne cursed, loud enough for the officers in the TOC to hear. If he hadn't been burdened by armor, he would have dropped the woman before she moved. But now she had a hostage and command of the situation.
"Get back!" the woman shrieked. "Do you hear me?"
With her free hand, she pulled a detonator from her coat, the same size and shape as the one Avery had seen in the workshop. She held the device in front of the boy's face.
"Get back, or I'll kill them all!"
For a moment, no one moved. Then, as if the woman's threat had pulled some invisible linchpin keeping all the diners locked to their seats, they sprung up and scrambled for the Jim Dandy's exits. Avery watched the chaos unfold in his HUD. He saw the bright white shapes of more than 30 terrified civilians surge around the Bravo squad, driving them back and confusing their aim.
"Johnson, take the shot!"
Byrne thundered over the comm. As Avery's Hornet orbited the restaurant, the stanchion's aiming vector rotated around the woman, piercing the axis of her chest. But her heat signature was almost indistinguishable from the boy's. Suddenly, Avery saw the ghostly image of the captured boy's father rise from his chair, hands raised to show the innie woman he was unarmed. Avery couldn't hear the father's pleas. They were too soft for the Bravo squad's helmet microphones. But his calmness only increased the woman's panic. She began backing toward the restroom, waving the detonator, her threats now so furious they were incomprehensible.
"Nail the bitch," Byrne shouted, "or I will."
"Firing,"
Avery said. But instead, he watched the aiming vector pivot, waiting for an angle that might spare the boy.
"Firing,"
he repeated, hoping his words would stay Byrne's trigger finger. But Avery didn't fire. Not immediately. And in his moment's pause, the father jumped forward, grasping for the detonator. Avery could only stare as the woman tumbled backward, father on top and the boy pressed between. He heard the rattle of Byrne's M7, then the muffled thump of the bomb in the purse, followed by the earth-shaking boom of the hauler's tires. The drone's feed bleached painfully bright, slamming Avery's eyes shut. Then a wall of shock and heat tossed him back hard against the Hornet's airframe. The last thing Avery remembered before he slacked inside his armor was the sound of thrusters fighting for altitude, a noise more like a scream than a moan.